We've been talking to Walter Bradley about near-death experiences and continue our conversation today on Mind Matters News.
Welcome to Mind Matters News, where artificial and natural intelligence meet head-on. Here's your host, Robert J. Marks.
Are there near-death experience accounts that can't be made up? Yes, there are. And why is there an increased preponderance in the reporting of near-death experiences? To talk about that, our guest today is Dr. Walter Bradley, who needs no introduction. He is the namesake of the Walter Bradley Center for Natural and Artificial Intelligence, and we have been talking in the last two podcasts about near-death experiences and want to continue that conversation. Dr. Bradley, welcome.
It's good to be here, Bob. Thanks.
Great. Why is there now a preponderance of stories about people that have gone through near-death experiences, where it seems that previously, in previous decades and centuries, there hasn't been? What's going on?
So for all of human history, until maybe the second half of the 20th century, the kinds of experiences that we're talking about most likely didn't occur, because the most common circumstance under which it occurs is when somebody has a physical death, no heartbeat, no brainwaves, in an emergency room where they can be resuscitated. And so it's during that period of time that they're clinically dead that they have these remarkable experiences. Now, people have been having those almost certainly since in the second half of the 20th century, but it still wasn't very widely recognized. And the reason was when you talk to these people many, many years later, why didn't you talk about this sooner? Well, I didn't know what to think myself. I was totally unsure of what in the world was going on here. And I didn't want people to think I was nuts. You know, if you report something like this, it sounds so preposterous. Then you worry about, oh, maybe they'll just take me from the emergency room to the mental institution, you know, thinking I've lost my mind. As more people began to sort of, with a lot of, I think, hesitation, share those experiences, it eventually resulted in a book that was called Life After Life that was published in 1975, giving many of these. And I think that opened the door for more people to begin to realize my experience is not weird.
Was this a popular book or a scholarly work?
I think it was a scholarly popular work,
okay.
if I can put it that way. And in that, it's written in a very evidential way, but I don't think it's footnoted and has, you know, peer reviews and all that. So I would say it's a very scholarly piece of work, but probably written intentionally for a popular audience. And I think that book really started the whole conversation. Incidentally, it's recently been reprinted. And I don't know if it's been updated in some way or not.
What was the name of the book again?
Life After Life.
Life After Life. Okay. Let's talk about John Burke.
Okay.
He wrote a book called Imagine Heaven. I've listened to it, and it was just compelling. It is definitely a popular book, and he documents many accounts of near-death experiences. More compelling than that, I found out, was John Burke's series of six videos that are on YouTube related to this book. And we're going to list links to it on the podcast page. Listening to firsthand account interviews with people is much more powerful than reading about them. They are just astonishing. Mm-hmm. You see these people break down and get emotional about their experiences and indicate how this has changed their lives. And it has changed a lot of lives. Now, John Burke's book, Imagine Heaven, was a book that you had your hand in. You went to John Burke's church, and you knew him, and you got acquainted with him. And tell the story about you and John Burke and the book of Imagine Heaven.
Okay. I had known John Burke, interestingly enough, when he was working doing Christian ministry in Russia right after the Iron Curtain fell. And I was over there doing some speaking, and so he'd invited me to come and speak at one of the universities. 10 years later, when we're both back in Texas, and he's a pastor now at a church in Austin, he asked me to come and speak to his congregation on a Sunday morning in an interview format having to do with, is there scientific evidence for the existence of God?
which you have given on just about every major campus in North America.
Yeah,
some of them twice.
Yeah, at least 75.
Wow.
So that's how John and I got reconnected. Well, we so appreciated his approach to ministry, and not just because he invited me to speak, but he really is a very, very thoughtful guy. And I think as pastors go, is in many ways exceptional. So when he had written the draft of this book, he really wanted an objective opinion by somebody who had been or was currently a practicing scientist to evaluate it based on the evidence. Did he do a fair job of dealing with that in a way that is scientifically credible? Well, I told him I'd be happy to read it, and if it did, then I'd be happy to endorse it, and if not, then, you know, I can't do that, and he wouldn't want it anyhow. So he gave me the manuscript, and I read it, and it was so amazing. Just one chapter after another chapter after another chapter. John did something that it took him 20 years to do. He read 1,000 different accounts of all of the people who'd had these near-death experiences. And in those 1,000 accounts, he found many, many different common threads. And so I think he did a wonderful job of starting with empirical data, not with assumptions about what the answer is, but as I like to say, to let the data do the talking. Interestingly enough, he read the book Life After Life the night his father died.
Wow.
And that's, his father had been reading the book. He'd been there in kind of a vigil, knowing his father was going to die. And as his father passed away that same evening, John had been reading, just out of curiosity, that book, Life After Life. And he read enough into it that he said, oh my gosh, he was an atheist at the time. This might really be true. You know, this.
So Burke was an atheist at the time?
Yeah, he was an atheist or an agnostic at the time.
I see.
Yeah. He was already out of college. He was a practicing engineer. And it was reading Life After Life that started him on his own spiritual journey. And over the next year, he eventually came to faith. But he came to faith as an adult. And I think he obviously, given how he came to faith, took an early and very keen interest in the whole business of near-death experiences and began to read over 20 years and do what I think of as research for this book. I think initially he was doing it because he was interested. And then eventually he read 1,000 different accounts of near-death experiences. And with that big of a database, was able to see what emerged, some remarkable patterns that seemed to be consistent. There were differences from one to other, to the next in ways that are not significant. But there were ways in which it was very significant, and these patterns then became, in a sense, the heart of his book that he wrote. But boy, it took him 20 years to do the research for it. He didn't do what a lot of people do, go out and get a few pieces of data and then make what I call a $1,000 story on $10 worth of data. No,
yes.
He did it the other way around.
Well, the interesting thing about Burke's book is that he emphasizes people with near-death experiences that don't have any skin in the game. Yes. He talks to people that are not interested in making money. They're not interested in being famous. They're mm-hmm. just laying it out there because it's true. Here's a question a skeptic would ask. Why should we trust the work of an engineer turned pastor, John Burke, in writing about such things?
Well, I think the critical question is, how good is the data? Because you don't have to be a rocket scientist. If you have enough data, then you're not having to do a lot of what I call speculation based on formal training of some kind. The data itself, I think, tells such a compelling story. It was his collecting the data and kind of systematizing it to see the patterns and so forth and so on that I think provided for me an incontrovertible evidence. And I started out at the beginning not knowing what I was going to think. I'd seen a couple of movies, one about the little boy called Heaven Is For Real.
Heaven Is For Real.
For real. Yes. There was a couple of other ones as well. And I saw those movies and I thought they were very inspiring. But to be honest, I didn't know what to make of it.
They were anecdotes, and sometimes right. people exaggerate their experiences because of underlying motives.
Yeah, heaven is for real. I thought was remarkable in what the little boy knew that he couldn't possibly know, like what his grandfather looked like when he was 30 years old, you know, and some things that like that that were compelling. But still, it was. I wondered why we only had this one data point, you know, or why don't we have more examples? Well, the truth of the matter was there were lots of examples, but people had been very hesitant to tell their stories. And now, all of a sudden, with life after life, it becomes more, at least socially acceptable, to talk about these things. And then what emerged from that was a huge number and a growing number of people who have had these experiences. I've been surprised to find, as I've shared with people, John Burke's book and how much I learned from it, finding people saying, I've had one of those.
Yes.
I've never told anybody. Okay. I have a good friend who's 50 years old, and he had one of these near-death experiences when he was 25. He had a terrible accident on an oil rig. And he said, I've never told anybody. And because I wasn't sure what to believe myself, you know. And in a way, Burke just lets the evidence do the talking. He doesn't speculate much at all. He simply lays out the story told by the data. And you can draw your own conclusions.
Which is a good way to present things.
He's not trying to sort of make a case.
Yes.
In a way, he's simply putting the data out, and it makes that case. Mm-hmm. You don't have to do a lot of connecting the dots. It's very clear, I think, the story that they tell.
That's wonderful. Let's talk a little bit more about some of the common threads mm-hmm. in these near-death experiences. We've already mentioned some of them. One is that the people described their experience as indescribable.
Yes.
I guess, how do you describe indescribable? That's not possible. The other thing was the light emanating from a person. The fact that there were more colors, that the spectrum was actually expanded and they saw colors that they'd never seen before. I want to see colors that I've never seen before.
I can hardly wait.
That's going to be really fascinating. The other one is the idea of extra dimensions. Now, Hugh Ross, in his works, believes that God exists in higher dimensions. Mm-hmm. And with higher dimensions, you can explain a lot of things theologically. And some of the survivors of near-death experience come back and actually talk about the fact that there's extra dimensions. And then they talk about the idea that there's different manifestations of time, mm-hmm. which is really strange. We know from physics and from the Bible, they're consistent on the idea that both time and space were created. The physics says at the Big Bang, mm-hmm. for example. And the fact that you can manifest different ideas of time is, I think, consistent with the idea that if God created the universe, then he exists outside of time, and therefore he can do strange things with time. He created it, and you can do strange and wonderful things with it. So anyway, those are some of the things that I found incredible in his Dr. Burke's book, Imagine Heaven. So, Dr. Bradley, thank you for spending this time. We're going to come back and we're going to talk one more time with Dr. Bradley in a subsequent podcast concerning near-death experiences. What are some specific anecdotes? What does the implication mean for being a Christian? Is there near-death experiences reported in Scripture? In fact, there's evidence that the Apostle Paul experienced a near-death experience. And we'll talk about other things next time on Mind Matters. Until then, be of good cheer.
This has been Mind Matters News with your host, Robert J. Marks. Explore more at mindmatters.ai. That's mindmatters.ai. Mind Matters News is directed and edited by Austin Egbert. The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of the speakers. Mind Matters News is produced and copyrighted by the Walter Bradley Center for Natural and Artificial Intelligence at Discovery Institute.